Hello and welcome to Father Figures, a show about fatherhood, uncommon fathers, fathers of all stripes. Here we talk about the risks and rewards, the griefs and the joys of being a dad. I'm your host, Stephen Amaya, and today's guest makes me consider this question. Do fathers figure in people's lives even when the father is completely absent? Do you think they do? Today's guest may help us find out. His name is Larry Glass. He's an Oregonian and only child raised by a single mom. He's now 67 and childless. Did a father figure in his life? Let's find out. I started, as always, by asking where he's from.
And I was born in Montebello, California, an eastern suburb of Los Angeles.
Did you enjoy your childhood there?
Yeah, I think I did. I had a sort of an extended family. My mom was a single mom, as we were talking about. Father was out of the picture at when I was 1 year of age. My parents divorced, so that my father was, except for a couple of visitations that were brief, he was out of the picture completely.
So you have no memories of him? Really?
As a shadow, as a presence, but not as a person. Even my mom tells me things about him, and it's like, you know, I recently saw his obituary. My mom found his obituary in the paper, and he died in Minnesota. And it's like, I looked at the picture, and I was like, oh, okay, that was your husband, right, back some 60-odd years. But the connection to me is I feel is only biological. I don't feel any kind of emotional relationship connection at all.
Now, you have no brothers and sisters, is that correct?
I don't. My little extended family consisted of my aunt, my maternal aunt, my maternal grandmother, who I spent a lot of time with when I was a kid.
Okay.
If I think about my memories of him, I think of just a presence, some inkling of a voice, a pack of cigarettes, a Zippo lighter.
Yeah.
That's about it. A 5 o'clock shadow, maybe.
He was gone at what age were you?
I was one when they divorced.
Okay.
And then there was some struggle over visitation. But then he came around to visit a couple of times. I must have been 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
And
okay.
after that, the last time I saw him was in a courtroom when he was trying to get custody, part custody. And I convinced the judge that wouldn't be a good idea. It was, you know, a family court. And there was, you know, testimony given by my mom and by my biological father and his new wife and his new children were there, you know. And I think the judge kind of asked me a couple of questions, and then he took me into chambers, just me, uh-huh. by myself. Uh-huh. And we had a discussion. Uh-huh. And I explained to him similar that, you know, I'm talking to you about, that I don't have any relationship with this person other than biology, that he had no role in my parenting. I don't know the person, essentially. And it would be very strange for me to be forced to, you know, have spend time with this person that I really don't know. He's really a stranger to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I you know, whatever happened between him and my mother is kind of like their business.
Are you aware of what split up the family? Or
what my mom says is that they both married fairly young, and my mom felt that he had no prospects. He was working in a cardboard factory,
mm-hmm.
and I think he was just not what she wanted in a spouse. I'm not sure what brought them together in the first place. I'm not sure when she actually got pregnant with me. That might have been something, but it's never been spoken of.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility too. But it was that she always says he was a nice boy, but he was immature and he wasn't going to do anything with his life. He didn't have a plan. He didn't go to college. And she wanted somebody that was going somewhere. She wanted somebody that she could make a life with, that was going to be, you know, propulsive in a, you know, kind of a forward direction. And as far as I know, that's the story, and it's really never varied.
Do you have any photos of him?
The only photo, do I still have it? I might have the obituary photo from this paper in Minnesota, but I think she just showed it to me. Other than that, she has photos. She has photos of their wedding,
mm-hmm.
And then I think she has the obituary photo, and that's about it. The beginning and the end.
Kind the of, highlight. So
it's one of those situations where, you know, a man and a woman create a child, so there's a biological connection. One of those two then has no further connection. And it really brings up the idea that, you know, when you think of adoptive parents and adopted children, that the nurturing is really the key thing in parenting. Biology is sort of random in a sense. I mean, you know, it's a mixing of genetic material between the two people. But what really creates the person really is it's the parenting.
Did that ever create distance from your mother, between you and your mother, just because that was their thing and they had a thing, and then you were on the sort of outside, you know, you were the leftover, you were the, you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I look at her history now, in looking backwards through her history, as an older adult, it's kind of easier for me to say that my connections with her were more circumstance than almost saying they're intentional. Mm. In other words, she got together with my biological father. She had a child. That child is me. She raised me. I became an adult. But the emotional attachments changed over the years. Mm. And now it's more neutral in a way, not uncaring. Mm-hmm. And I have a strong sense of duty toward her that, you know, she's 88 now. She'll be 89 this year, in pretty good health, but she's had some real problems health-wise. And, of course, the death of her husband about 4 years ago. So, you know, I have a strong sense of duty, a strong sense of caring. But over the years, it's not emotional anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that is coupled with the growing realization of how a parent is an independent person. And I think that's important because we talk about parents as a role, but people tend to want to weave it into their genes, want to make it a permanent tattoo on them. Mm-hmm. And parenting is, you know, something you do, but you're a person underneath that. Because when you're finished parenting and your, you know, child is 18, leaves home, whatever, the person continues. And that person has their own personality, their own proclivities, yeah, whatever. And so over the years, that's what's grown in my feeling and modified my relationship, is that this is a person, and sometimes I don't like that person so much. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel that's not a person I would gravitate toward if she mm-hmm. weren't my parent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that can be kind of a shocking feeling sometimes, that it's not that you're disowning them, it's that you're redefining the relationship as an adult, because it's a different relationship than you had as a four-year-old.
Yes, yes. And there's sort of a split on these episodes a bit about what you're talking about. How about parents who stop parenting, you know, it's 18. And then there's another part that a cohort that says, you're always a parent. And, you know, you're never going to stop being a parent. There's no way you know, if you're a parent, it is apparent that you cannot stop.
Yeah.
You know.
I think my mom is in that camp, that she always thinks of me as her son, as her offspring. And my wife has this experience in a different way, that her parents always see her as their child. But sometimes that clouds, I think, a parent's vision that, you know, when your child is 67 years old, mm-hmm. you have to respect them as an adult with a wealth of experience and a life that they've created. Mm-hmm. And the sense of possession, or the sense of not encountering them fully as a human being, yeah, it's weird for me. I think it's weird for her that, you know, there's this locked in sense that once you're the child, in the parent's mind, you're always the child.
Yes, yes, as opposed to being an adult or a parent or whatever.
Yeah. You think you want to be my feeling is I want to be an adult friend of my mother who's, yes, I'm her son, But that means something different than it meant when I was 4 years old or 5 years mm-hmm. old. I mean, I, you know, and it's not a broken type of thing. It's not that we've fallen out and we've had distance between us. It's just that, you know, I see her differently and more fully and more realistically.
And I think that happens among only children earlier than it does in people with siblings. How old were you when you realized you were sort of an autonomous person?
I think pretty early on. Part of that was because I spent time by myself, so I had to create my own, you know, again, my own relationships with the outside world. I think my interests, you know, were divergent from my mom's. We don't share a lot of interests, I think my sense of imagination, my ability to, you know, create worlds in my head, you know, helped to find. So I think it was pretty early on. It was, you know, maybe 4, 5, 6 years old that felt that, you know, adults were around. It was almost to the extent that the adults are around because they want to be around. They want to do these things. If they disappeared, I'd be okay. You know, I'd figure it out.
It sounds like you were almost an accessory.
In some ways, I mean, I kind of felt like that. But I mean, the flip side of that would be that I just felt like another personage in that family. There were four of us: my maternal aunt, my maternal grandmother, my mother, and myself. And we were like a little nucleus of a family. My grandfather had died back in 1962, and I was just I was just another small person in that. And yeah, you know, you go to bed early and you don't get to make decisions for the family. But, you know, I never felt like, you know, the kid who's told to just go away and don't bother me. You know, the adults have to do adult things. We always did things. We sat around and listened to Elvis Presley records together, the four of us. And we had, you know, holidays together and, you know, and it just felt like, you know, we were four people. I think that helped foster that sense of, being more grown up at an early age.
Now, growing up as an only child and as a person with an absent father, did you ever feel, in comparison to your schoolmates, that you were somehow different or afflicted was there something deficient in you?
Quite the contrary. I kind of developed a sense that fathers were harsh, that they had these qualities that didn't jive with what I recognized as parenting skills, because I knew how my mom raised me. And there were these fathers, I think most of the fathers followed, the usual social construct of the dominant father, the man who lords over the family, who carries the implicit threat of violence, never necessarily executed upon, but sometimes in some families, the primary breadwinner, which didn't jive with my situation either.
Right.
So these fathers were, you know, strange creatures. I mean, who were they? Why, when there's two, why are they different? You know, you would think that, oh, I had a mother that was parented a certain way, had certain traits. If you had two parents, well, it would just be two of those. Mm-hmm. They would both be like that. But instead, there is this duality, and it was just really weird. I'll give you an example. There was one family that we used to visit not far from where we lived, and it was a father and mother and two children, an older boy and a younger girl. And, I used to go in their bedroom and we'd play around. And we were young. We'd play and do things. And sometimes we'd make a little too much noise or they would get into a spat with each other. And invariably, one or the other of the parents, usually the mother, would come in and just be enraged to a degree that was frightening. Mm. And the father would come in and he'd back her up and he was enraged. Looking back, it's the difference between being assertive and being aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I don't think those parents had figured that out. I think they were in over their heads.
They didn't know the difference.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you talk about father figures, you talk about the classic male father. as being assertive, assuming dominance, and imposing law. Even if the rules are made by the mother, the father comes in and says, yeah, that's how it's going to be. You know, I'm the ultimate judge here. And that was all very strange.
So how has your circumstance shaped your adulthood? Your outlook, your confidence, and after you answer that question, how did it affect your finding a mate?
The way my mother parented was, she was very definite about what's right and wrong. Strong sense of ethics, strong sense of morality, strong sense that to be a proper good person in the world, you need to do the right things. That can extend to morality. It also can extend to paying your bills on time. It can also extend to you go to school, you get good grades, you get a good job, you become a solid, substantial person. You do the best you can. And, she had very, very strong sense of that. And that's definitely carried through in a lot of ways through my adulthood and shaped me as I am. And it's interesting because I think a sense of personal confidence, a sense of judging what's right and wrong and recognizing that in the world. I mean, she will go after some person at some business if she feels she's been wrong. She will just be a bulldog and she'll get what she wants by being persistent. So we talk about, blending masculine and feminine traits within one person and then imparting those to your child. And so I recognize this in looking back that she was assertive when she needed to be. She was aggressive when she needed to be. And I saw that, that can be used. But I also got the idea that you need to keep that under control. You need to use it skillfully and not just let it get out of hand. What I saw, like I was talking about just before, that, parents that let that get out of hand aren't doing their kids really any benefit because they don't put it in any kind of systematic approach to life. It's just yelling. It's just, you're bad, don't do that. As opposed to saying, there are behaviors that are good. Follow those behaviors. Do that. And she was very strong about that. In terms of finding a mate, I think I was looking for somebody that also had that strong sense. And my wife is very much that way. She has a very strong sense of what's right and wrong, both politically and personally. That really appealed to me. To me, that there's a lot of harmonization between us because of that. I don't have to feel that somebody is living at cross purposes in their relationship with the outside world. And so my mom was really strong about that, and that was good. Oh, one other thing I'll just tack on to that. Yeah. We talked about this last night. I think my mom raised me with the idea that I was male. I'm going to be a man in society. And, of course, it's conventional thinking of the 1950s and 60s, but, that was common. You are going to be a man in the world. You are going to go out. You are going to find a woman. You're going to marry her. You're going to have a family, probably. Your behavior needs to be supportive, caring. You need to do the right thing by your wife. And I'm going to raise you to be the man that I would want as a partner. And so there's a template there. And I think that was something she employed, all the time, that, you need to be imbued with these characteristics. You need to have personality and behaviors because that is how you'll be successful, not only, in a business sense and a career sense, be successful socially. You will have a good relationship if you do that. And that was interesting because in her own relationship, she sort of didn't get the men that she would have wanted. And I think she wanted me to be something that maybe she couldn't have in her own life somehow.
Did you ever have a desire to have kids?
No. Interestingly, it never occurred to me. I had difficulties during my childhood, sort of emotional difficulties. And based on that, I couldn't see myself potentially subjecting somebody else to going through that kind of thing, to create a new life intentionally with the idea that they could suffer, was I absolutely could not conceive of that.
You would want an unsuffering child,
which doesn't exist. I mean, to suffer is to live.
Yes.
As you know, as philosophers have said, as religious texts have said, life is suffering, says the Buddha, but suffering is instructive.
Yes.
But to think about meeting someone and having a life with them and creating a child, it was not an impulse that I ever had.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I philosophize about it now, but just in terms of pure impulse,
yeah,
I think I'm too selfish in a way. I think it may leak back to that idea we were talking about becoming cognizant of your own personhood at an early age, and in some ways maybe being a little addicted to that personhood. Maybe enjoying your own company too much, thinking of yourself a little bit too much. I don't know. I mean, I don't consider myself an arrogant person in any way, but a little, but not toxically. But yeah, it just never occurred to me that I would want to create a person. And people who, they have babies as an expression of their love. They want to have a family because it's normal to have a family and produce offspring and have the next generation. And I guess for me it was, okay, that's what they do in those other countries that are not part of the country that I'm part of. I'm separate.
If you were to have a child, would you want a boy or a girl?
That's a good question. I don't know. I guess if I had to choose, I'd say a boy, because I think, I don't know. I think in some ways maybe it'd be easier to relate to, but I don't know. I don't know how that would work out. I think it works out either way. I can't see myself not being able to relate to a girl, to a daughter.
Yeah.
And I think that would be something that would be important to me if I had a daughter, is that that recognition of what women encounter in the world, and how we have to continually work to change that in small and large ways.
Have you ever been a stepfather?
Yes, for a short time. My wife has a son from her first marriage.
Did you feel any paternal instincts at all?
I don't think as such. Or if I did, I didn't recognize them as paternal. It was more like I wanted her son to be a younger friend. I wanted us to relate as people, because that's how I would have wanted to have a stepfather relate to me, as just a person who has a more adult relationship, even though one's younger, and to maybe lead by example, but not so much definite parenting, not telling him what to do, not setting guidelines for him, et cetera, is more like, I think it's more avuncular than anything else, you might say, because in other words, not a direct parent, but a member of the family who usually, like a grandparent who has a relationship, who provides probably some kind of guidance, some kind of nurturing. But it's usually not disciplinary in nature. It's usually supportive, instructive. It can be, who you learn. In some societies, maternal uncles are the ones who teach you the cultural. And so I think that's a good role, that you know you're not the parent. On the one hand, you're not responsible for the outcome of raising the child. By the other hand, you want to show them some things about what it means to be an adult, and to impart in some maybe more gentle ways your own values. But as long as they have to be consistent with the biological parent. So you can't have those kinds of conflicts.
Now, you mentioned having a stepfather. What was that like?
That was odd also.
When did it start?
It started in high school. I think I was probably maybe 16, 17. I think I was driving at the time. So it would have been about 16 at the earliest. It was strange because the man that my mother married was not somebody I would have expected her to partner up with. He came from a different social and cultural background. He tried to be a friend and fulfill that role as sort of an older guiding friend.
More of a friend than a father.
I think so for the most part. We talked about, you know, mature masculinity. He didn't have the balance. He was also an alcoholic also.
Do you have any desire for the continuation of your genetic code?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing. One day, I don't remember when it was, but, you know, one day I realized that, you know, my lineage was going to end with me. And I was okay with that. Because I guess I took a larger view of Homo sapiens, you know, that there's, you know, billions of people in the world. And, you know, if I wanted to continue my line, I would have had the impulse to have children and, you know, continue giving to the world and trying to make the world a better place. But I guess it goes back to sort of that little bit of selfishness. It's like, oh, I'm going to live my life. And then when my life is over, my line, whatever that means, is also ended. Doesn't mean that humanity can't move forward. There are lots of wonderful people, smart, you know, forward-thinking, insightful people. And
but don't you have special gifts to impart to the Earth?
I guess I see myself, as sort of a self-contained entity that I'm not connected to what came before me. I'm not connected to what comes after me. I'm a bubble floating free.
I found that to be a fascinating outlook. Certainly men grow up without fathers all the time, and many of them don't have kids either. But do fathers figure in their lives? What do you think after hearing this? I think it's a different kind of wholeness, self-possessed and secure in oneself. I don't know. You decide. I think Larry offers a glimpse of what it's like to interact anthropologically about your own life, seeing it from inside a disconnected, free-floating bubble. What I come away with is the view of a man disconnected as far as family is concerned, and at the same time, secure and apparently quite happy in that fact. I can't help but wonder what his life would have been like otherwise. Worse? Better? Who can say? I want to thank Jason Shaw of Audionautics.com for today's music, and please, if you want to drop me a line, send it along to RadioRanchero@gmail.com. It's been great to hear from you, so keep those emails coming. It's a delight to receive them. So until next time on Father Figures, remember the days may be long, but the years are short. Bye-bye.